So as long as we're on alternate agents, I was going to ask you later when we talk about follicular lymphoma about PI3 kinase inhibitors, but you mentioned it already. And I saw that you've done work looking at toxicity with adalimumab. Can you talk about right now what we know about adalimumab in CLL as well as FL, but particularly the tolerability and toxicity issues, the autoimmune problems, and again, other agents? The one I've heard about is copanlisib, whether they look more promising from that point of view.
Yeah, the PI3K inhibitors, particularly idelalisib, is highly effective in relapsed refractory CLL and highly effective in quite refractory follicular lymphoma. Now, there has been some attention paid, as appropriately with any new drug, to the toxicity profile. And the toxicity profile has been related to immune-mediated or autoimmune complications, including a colitis, a pneumonitis, and a chemical or immune-mediated hepatitis with idelalisib, as well as some increased risk of infections. And the increased infectious risks, and including an increased death from infections, actually prompted early closure of some frontline clinical trials with idelalisib. I think, though, that an important message is this is a highly active drug. Now, in relapsed refractory CLL, we do have alternate drugs that target the high-risk populations, like venetoclax and ibrutinib. Both effectively target high-risk population 17p, complex karyotype, et cetera. Idelalisib also works well in that context and is an available option, though I would typically favor one of the other agents given the toxicity profiles. For a follicular lymphoma patient, idelalisib was specifically studied in a true unmet medical need, patients who are refractory to both anti-CD20 monoclonal antibody and alkylating based chemotherapy. These are folks with no standard available options that are proven in that context, and these are patients who are at high risk of dying of follicular lymphoma. In that context, the response rate was close to 55%, the progression-free survival was close to a year. These are certainly respectable findings in a high-risk population. So I think you have to assess what the rest of the landscape is. Only a minority of patients develop an immune-mediated toxicity on idelalisib. So what I would say is, as long as you understand the toxicity profile and monitor patients appropriately, most patients can tolerate this very safely. Things like the hepatitis, which we see as a transaminitis, typically occurs early in the course, median of 6 to 8 weeks after starting. So I do recommend monitoring patients' LFTs for the first couple of months of starting their treatment. The colitis is typically a later event, 6 months or so after starting, patients developing diarrhea. So they have to know to call with that. Patients need to know to call with cough, shortness of breath, fever to look for pneumonitis. And in those settings, typically steroids help quell that down, and many patients can be resumed on idelalisib at a dose reduction. So right now, I don't often use it in CLL due to other available options. I do use it in refractory follicular lymphoma, where it's been studied and certainly is effective.
Again, what about other PI3 kinase inhibitors, including copanlisib?
Yeah, there's some intriguing but early data with copanlisib. There's also a drug TGR-1202, which is another PI3K delta inhibitor, which at least preliminarily looks to be similarly highly effective, but with fewer of these immune-mediated toxicities like hepatitis and colitis. So I think we're still seeing data emerge, but I think what idelalisib teaches us is it's an effective class of drugs in unmet medical needs, but I suspect next-generation compounds like we're talking about may ultimately offer an improved risk-to-benefit ratio.